Good evening, everyone. My name is Will Cheney. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Will.
Very grateful that I was asked to speak this evening. And I do have a sponsor and a home group. My home group is Friends of Bill W. We meet on Thursdays at noon and at 7 o'clock. The noon meeting is as Bill sees it, and the 7 o'clock is a big book study. And I'm willing and available to sponsor other men. And alcohol held an allure for me from the earliest age. I can recall smelling alcohol on my dad's breath and liking it. And I remember maybe when I was 7 years old, he gave me a sip of alcohol or of his beer, and I liked that too. And when I was in the fourth grade, I was 8 years old, and he took me to Tom's Tavern in the middle of the day, the bright sunlight. We walked into that dark cave, and he let me sit next to him at the bar. And he got a beer, and I just loved the whatever was on the bottle, and it seemed to be cold, and the lights of the jukebox, everything about it. I could not wait, even at that age, to when I could be up there with the big boys. And so I do not attribute my alcoholism to him. He was an alcoholic. But I do not attribute my alcoholism to him, because I now know, as a result of the steps, that I acquired fear as a constant companion from the earliest age. And so I acquired the disease of alcoholism all on my own. And my dear mother was mentally ill. She experienced mental illness in the form of depression, which I would come to know too. And but she was wonderful. She loved being a mother. She became a mother at 17. I was born when she was 19. And she taught me well. And she taught me to be a gentleman, and that it's better to give than to receive, and to love my neighbor, and to trust God. I just never could get that part because of the fear that was blocking me. And so when I started going out in the world as a teenager, I had that first experience of getting drunk. And it was at a nightclub in downtown Richmond, the Tantilla Club, and they had live music and dancing. And I danced for the first time in my life, and I was drunk, and it was wonderful. I didn't dance with a woman. It didn't take away that much fear, but the last thing I remember is being carried out over the bouncer's shoulder out of the back door. But there were no consequences that night. I was probably 16. I was staying with a friend in his father's basement, and nobody knew any better. And a lot of my life went that way. You know, I would behave badly and get drunk, but there would be no consequences. And that finally began to catch up with me later. But, you know, I had found a solution. I was a binge drinker. I didn't drink every day, but I knew I had that solution. And when I drank, it gave me comfort. It gave me peace. It made me outgoing. And it did draw me to beautiful, wonderful women. Boy, did I hit the jackpot a number of times. God kept blessing me. And, you know, I was good at getting the woman, but keeping the woman long term, it just wasn't part of living with untreated alcoholism. I would, from the earliest age when I started drinking, I developed that phenomenon of craving. I can look back and see it now, that once I had one, I wanted all I could get my hands on. And so I had already married and parted ways with one woman, and I was living with a woman in Greenville, North Carolina, in the mid-80s. And she, in a very sweet voice, asked me to please leave. And I packed all my stuff up into a U-Haul. I went up, drove up to Salisbury, Maryland to live with my brother, who had offered me a place to stay. Otherwise, I was homeless. And I bought a 12-pack as soon as I got away from the house, and I started drinking beer, and I got out here on the Bay Bridge Tunnel, and I just wanted to turn the wheel and go over the side. I was 35 years old, maybe, thought my life was over. I never had the wherewithal to do anything like that to myself. Thank you, God. I was just never had the wherewithal to cause myself any direct harm. I mean, I was in a slow motion suicide besides that, but I wasn't gonna be the one to end it. So yeah, I got up there to my brother's place drunk, and he was kind to me, and I didn't have another drink for 2 years. And I developed the Will Cheney program. Oh, it was a great program. And you know, I became a positive. I got to be in a pretty good place. I met a guy at work who was drunk, and he started working the Will Cheney program with me, and we were exercising together. And I'd go out to Assateague and try and teach myself to surf, and I'd go out there at night and look at the stars. And I wanted whatever was out there, that spirituality, I couldn't even quantify it at the time. Just wasn't willing to do anything to get it. I just wanted a magic wand to give it to me. And so, that 2 years, like I say, I took a course in land surveying and got to be in a pretty good place and exercise and in good shape. And I met a woman, and she lived in Richmond, and we began to commute back and forth. She would come visit me, and I'd go visit her. And she invited me to dinner one night in Richmond, and I drove down there in my work van, and I got there, and she was like 12 years younger than me, full of life, We chatted for a bit, and after 5 minutes, I excused myself to go to the restroom. And when I came back, she had ordered a bottle of wine and 2 glasses. And I did not have the courage to tell her. It had been 2 years since my most recent drink. I didn't have the courage to tell her I had a problem with alcohol. And she had been around me for a while, 4 or 5 weeks, and I hadn't had a drink. She never asked. So I drank with her, and I did okay. And we began to see each other more and more, and then she actually popped the question. And so we got married, and we had a pretty magical marriage for 12 years. The only time there was any upset was when I drank too much. And we go out for a wonderful dinner, and come back home, and she'd go to bed at 9 o'clock. And she'd drink, like a drink and a half or a glass of wine. And I'd say, okay, I'm going to watch TV. And that meant, you know, I could drink to my heart's content. And so she would maybe once in a while find me passed out on the floor the next morning with the headphones blaring. And she'd get so very upset. It was the only time we had any upset in our marriage. As I approached 50 years old, she had decided she wanted to have a child, and I was scared to death because we started trying, and I didn't have the courage to tell her. I didn't think I could handle that. I wanted her to have it, but I just slipped into a black hole of deep depression. It was a matter of I had everything I thought I'd ever want in life to make me happy. Beautiful home, great jobs, money. We traveled to New York City every year on our anniversary. And I had arrived. And one day I went to meet a customer, and I had to call him. His office was in Gloucester. I got him to meet me halfway because I could not make it all the way. And when I finished meeting him, I came back home, and I just started pacing in the house. And I called my wife and I said, I don't know what to do. I'm falling apart. And she said, you need to get some help. Not AA. She said, call a psychiatrist. And I said, okay, I can do that. And that dear lady, she did her best to help me with medications and so forth. But she never once said, hey, Will, you've got a sickness of the soul that distorts your thinking and causes your emotional state to swing between euphoria and the abyss. And if she'd have said that, I wouldn't have known what to do with it, but that was the case. Now that I know that was the case of what was wrong with me. And I became paralyzed and went to bed for pretty much for 2 years. The only time I left the house was to go see her and go get a haircut. And my wife, I would sleep all day and my wife would come home from work and I'd muster up enough energy to go meet her on the front porch. And as she walked up the sidewalk, I could see what we had together ebbing out of her eyes and I was powerless to do anything about it. And she finally came to me on a New Year's Eve and said, Will, I got to go. And I was devastated, but I understood because she had to go to save her life. And I had stayed up with her stepfather on Christmas Eve at her mother's house, drinking shots of Rebel Yell until late. And then on Christmas Day, I couldn't answer the bell. That was the last straw, and I knew it. And her car left the driveway on her birthday, March 3rd. And I just proceeded to get the job done. I started drinking heavily. I hadn't really drunk that heavily when I was depressed, but I started drinking and falling down the stairs and was taking Ambien, and so I'd try and carry two drinks with me up the stairs. And one night I got up to the top of the stairs and just flopped back over. And down at the bottom of the stairs, laying in the foyer, in the broken glass, laughing out loud. And I said out loud, why am I still alive? And now I know. Because God had a vision for me. God had a vision for my life. He had a plan when I had no vision and no plan. Now, I wasn't quite ready yet. And I rambled around that house, falling down the stairs for quite a number of years. And I know there was another time that I stopped for 2 years. And I finally came out of that drunken depression and didn't drink again for 2 years. And then one day I woke up and I was living alone and the birds were tweeting. And I was trading on the memory of that pain and the suffering and the chaos that alcohol caused in my life. My memory dims. And I woke up and the birds were tweeting. I think I'll start drinking again. And I went on a 5-year bender. I mean, not every day. But, you know, I was just going to do it Will's way. And I was telling anyone that would listen, I didn't want any entanglements, meaning women. And, of course, I met a woman and married her within 3 or 4 months. And that didn't work out too well. And we never lived together. We lived 4 hours apart. Great marriage for a night. You know, I'd get upset and I'd say, I'm going home. And she'd go, good. Here, take this luggage that you gave me too. But I call them dust ups. So my untreated alcoholism progressed. Thank God I had the time and money to drink to my heart's content. I lived in the woods by myself on the back porch. I would drink at her. Boss Skaggs has a song, Gone and Lost This Real Good Thing. Yeah, I was a real good thing. And I started my last 3-day binge on my 59th birthday. Alcohol was still working well for me. I still loved to drink despite all the pain and the chaos and the suffering. And I had 3 friends coming to stay with me to go to a concert. Baby, I got the job done that weekend. And when I came to that Sunday morning, they were supposed to stay till Monday. And when I came to, they were all gone. And I knew it was because of my behavior. And I came to on the sofa at 7 in the morning. And there was, I experienced yet again that state of being our book calls pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I cracked open a bottle of liquor at 7 in the morning and did my best to drink it away like I always had. Because I had experienced it before, but not to this extent. I don't remember much after that. I was thinking, still taste that first drink. I don't remember much after that. And when I came to the next day, I knew I was done. I was scared to death because I didn't know what my life would look like. But I knew, all I knew was I could not suffer anymore. It's like God, my dad, and older brother had gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I suffered horribly that day, just horribly. And I spoke to a 12-stepper later that evening. I had my neighbor come over after that and take all the liquor out of the house because I didn't trust myself. He said, "My God, Will." And he kept taking case after case. I said, "Well, you got to be prepared, you know." Still had a little bit of a sense of humor. But I talked to that 12-stepper, and he had such peace in his voice. And he said, "A man will come and pick you up and take you to a meeting tomorrow night." And it gave me a little bit of hope. He said, "You got any candy or any chocolate?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I got a little chocolate." He said, "Try and eat a little chocolate." I said, "Okay." And that next day, that next evening, I'm peeping out of the window, and here comes that guy down the driveway to pick me up. And he took me to that meeting, and it was an anniversary meeting. And they were serving ice cream and cake, and I hadn't eaten in 3 days. And they gave me a helping before the meeting. I could barely get it to my mouth. My hand was shaking so bad, but it tasted so good. And they took a mercy on me and gave me 2 helpings. And during that meeting, they said, "Does anybody want a white chip?" And the man that took me to the meeting was sitting across from me, and he gave me this look like, "Will, this would be your time to shine." My first AA nudge. And I got up and I went and picked up a white chip. And I didn't admit that night I was an alcoholic, but I knew it in my heart. And I was on my way. I left that meeting and I looked up at the half moon and I had more hope. And that man continued. I drove myself to a meeting the next night, but then he and another man picked me up and took me to my third meeting. And there was a guy there that had a big smile on his face and all you could see was the white teeth. He appeared to be happy to be there. And I said, "You know, if I'm going to be here, I might as well be happy about it like that guy." Now, I'm sure there were other people there that were, but God just put a spotlight on this guy, and some of you may know him. And as I left the meeting, I can still see it in my mind's eye. He's standing across the room, and he's got a big smile. He says, "Come Monday night, we're having a business meeting." And I went, I thought to myself, "That sounds horrible. I don't really want to be at this meeting." And so at 7 days, I called him. I made a phone call. That's all I did. God picked my sponsor. All I had to do was dial the phone and say, "Will you be my sponsor?" And he didn't say yes. But he said, "Are you going to the picnic this weekend, this Saturday?" And the only reason I said yes was I heard a pretty girl say she was going. And I said, "Yeah, I'm going." And I went to the picnic, and she wasn't there, but he was. And we chatted, and he said, "Will, are you willing to go to any lengths to win victory over alcohol?" I didn't even have to think about it. Yes. I had no idea what he was talking about. Yes. And he said, "Well, I want you to call me in the morning. Call me at 8:30. And I said, "Okay." I don't remember him saying, "Is that convenient for you?" And I did. And I began, he said, "I want you to call me every day." Now, I do remember thinking, am I going to have to call this guy every day for the rest of my life? I was ready, but, you know, I was just fresh off the turnip truck, so there was some reluctance still. But I'll tell you, looking back, it is the best time of my life because I was finally willing to learn to live a different way. And he began to give me these directions in a firm but loving way. It was palatable to me. And so I would call and say, I said my prayers this morning, I did my reading, and I'm going to this meeting today. Oh, I loved it when I'd get his voicemail. And I would leave that on the voicemail. You know how it is when you're new. And I'd go back to bed. And fortunately, I had a job where I was in sales and there wasn't much happening. I had time to devote to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so we started making the coffee together. And he had me, I chaired a big book meeting at 30 days. I attended my first business meeting just after that. And I became the intergroup rep and attended my first intergroup meeting at just over 60 days. And I remember he drove me to that meeting. And he was right there side by side with me, showing me the ropes. Now, I can't say I had a great time at that meeting. It seemed like they were talking about a very small amount of money for a very long time. But I did it. And after 30 days, we met to open the book and go through the 12 steps. And I remembered he looked me squarely in the eye and he said, "Will, the reason we're doing this is so you might have a personal relationship with the God of your understanding." That sounded pretty good to me. I've never had anything like that in my life. And I said, "Okay." And boy, we had such fun meeting. And we started having a little friendly competition of who would get there first, because he hated it when I got there before. and this, the home group, it looks very similar. My home group at the time, the Shoemaker group, it looked very similar to this group here tonight. And I just love a room full of alcoholics. And you know what? I got depressed as I mourn the loss of my old life. I needed to mourn that old life that I loved so much. That's all I knew. But it was okay because I continued to follow the directions to the best of my ability. I say I was as fearless and thorough as I could be at the time. Those words kept ringing through my ears. And at 6 months, I probably with a nudge from my sponsor, another alcoholic came up to me and asked me if I would sponsor him. And I just blurted out the word yes. I had forgotten the way I was taught, but I never forgot again when men asked me to sponsor him. And I always say, "I'm willing and available, but let's meet and chat." And so I just followed the blueprint. And boy, that man helped me so much more than I helped him, I know, because he didn't seem to want it as much as I did. he really helped me. It was a great experience for me. And as I had a mother that was ill in Florida, and so I would visit her from time to time. And as I was coming up on 9 months and approaching the eighth step, we got into the eighth step and I was approaching, ready for the ninth step. And so I left to drive down to Florida and I drove to Brunswick, Georgia. And I had been depressed and so I got a hotel room. And at 6:30 in the morning, on my knees in that hotel room, I experienced a spiritual awakening and a psychic change. And I had been praying for God to lift this veil of depression so that I might be of service to others. And spontaneously, I just said, "Thank you, God, for having lifted the veil of depression so that I might be helpful to others." and the tears started streaming down my face. And it had rained the whole way down the night before. And when I opened the door to go out to my car, the sun hit my face. And the tears started flowing again, and I started singing that one-hit wonder, I can see clearly now the rain. Whenever I hear that, I just got chills just singing it. It just means so much to me because I could see clearly. And my spiritual experience was a down-to-earth experience where the weight that I had carried all my life lifted. I felt like I was walking on air. And it was, I had laid my burdens down, my fear. And instead of that negative, self-defeating, fear-based thinking, I began to think with a positive, helpful attitude. I had a purpose in life to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Then I called Steve and I said, Steve, something's happened. And he said, well, what do you mean? I told him, and he said, well, you've had a spiritual experience, just matter of fact, as always. And I said, really? And I went down that night, and I made amends to my mother and then my stepfather. And they both showed me such grace. I made amends to my mother first, and I said, what can I do to make it right? She said, well, you go to your stepfather and say what you just said to me. And he said, well, you just keep doing whatever it is you're doing. And I said, yes, I can do that. I said, I can't promise I'll never drink again, but I intend not to drink again. And then my brother showed up, and I made amends to him the next day. And then I just headed back home, driving home near the Florida-Georgia border, basking in the glow of a spiritual awakening, and a BMW cut me off in what I perceived a particularly egregious way. And we got into this road rage, back and forth, and jawing and hand signs. It didn't last but a few seconds. And I went, oh my God, you're acting like the old. And I slowed down, and I let him go. And I started driving like my life, my license was suspended. Like a responsible, sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, about 30 miles down the road, I saw him pulled over by a state trooper. I couldn't help but toot the horn. I would hope that I wouldn't do that today, because it doesn't show much humility. But it felt good at the time. And when you know, about a month later, I went back, and my mother went into the hospice, and I got to be with her and spend the night with her. And I got to be holding her hand and stroking her hair and telling her I loved her when she took her last breath. And in that moment, I came to believe in eternal life. I experienced the ascension of her spirit. She got to see her baby boy sober and having a spiritual awakening. I was feeding her little spoonfuls of vanilla Häagen-Dazs at the end, her last thing she enjoyed. I had a smile on my face when she passed, and I detected one on hers too. God put me at peace through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yes, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. And I came to realize that my inner life was unmanageable. Sure, I could make money and live, but it was that emotional, mental, spiritual part of me that I could not manage. And when Steve said, as a newcomer, Will, hold your face to the light, I would literally go on my back porch at sunrise, and he guided me to my knees, and I would hold my face to the light and seek God. I did that this morning. I bundled up and went on the back porch. And this all seems like it's happened in a flash. If you're new, please enjoy it. And that third step, You know, when I surrendered, I'd done that first and second and part of the third. It was the third step that had me beginning to understand being helpful to others. And I love, every day I say that third step prayer. And I love asking God to take away my difficulties. It's very helpful to me. Because when I'm having difficulties, I need to be asking God. He helps me every single time. And that fourth step, it was such a wonderful experience. My sponsor had told me to try and do 15 minutes every day. And I did that for a while, and then I got hung up on one particular resentment. And I called him at the appointed time one day, and he said, "How are you coming with that four step?" And I said, "Well, I'm working on it." He said, "That means you're not doing anything." I said, "Well, that's pretty insightful." I said, what I thought was a stupid question when I hung up was the best question I've ever asked. I said, "Now, is there a percentage in the my fault column? Like, the other person, could they be 80% at fault and I'm 20? "Well, it was all your fault." Oh my God. The light bulb came on. This one particular one I was hung up on, it was a man who tried to trespass against me when I was 14. But I wanted to drive his red Corvette. I saw the red flags and heard the alarm bells, and I forged ahead because I was being selfish. And so once I had gotten that one, the others just flowed. That four step, the grace and forgiveness that I had to have for others began to flow. And that fifth step was such a wonderful experience. We sat on my back porch. And beautiful evening, and you know, all the apprehension ahead of time just evaporated as soon as we sat down. And he shared things about his life, and man, I go, "I had a pretty good life as an alcoholic. I love hearing these stories." And when we got to the end, he looked me in the eye, and he said, "Your problem is your pride." And I only had an inkling of what he was talking about, but I knew we were on the right track. And then 6 and 7, I gotta do is live life. If I live life and I see where I fall short, and boy, this brings humility into my life. You know, as an alcoholic that's trying to make progress, you know, I'm doing the practicing the 10th step, doing these spot inventories, and I know when I'm falling short. And so whenever I fall short, it brings more humility into my life, and I go through the process. I do whatever needs to be done, get on my knees, talk to God, get my notebook out, write some things down about how this is affecting me, my self-esteem and my personal relationships and my pride. So that I gotta look at it. And then I get together with my sponsor and I go over it. We started the fifth step. I've never done another one. I'm still doing the same fifth step that we started that night. And the eighth step came alive in my life so much when I was about four years of sobriety, and we were reading the 12 and 12 in a meeting, and it said that first paragraph in step 8, "With my newfound knowledge, I am meant to have the best possible relations with every human being I know." Now that's a tall order, but I knew who it was talking about. It was talking about my dad. And we had become estranged several years previous because of something abhorrent he had said to me. And we had a parting of the ways. And God, you know, God orchestrates through all kinds of human experiences, including death. And I had a wonderful phone call with my older brother just before Christmas. And we told each other we loved each other and we'd finally gotten it right as brothers. And 2 days later, I got a phone call from his wife, and he had passed away suddenly. And he lived in Destin, Florida. And eventually, I was asked to do the eulogy. And so I got in my car, and I learned, it fell upon me to call my dad to give him the news. And he said he would be at the funeral. And so as I'm driving up, I'm within 2 hours of the hotel and I'm gonna be seeing him, I'm listening to a Christmas carol on the radio. And Scrooge's nephew tells his family that he has invited Scrooge for Christmas dinner. And the family says, why would you ask him? He's so bah humbug or whatever. And he says, his offenses are their own punishment. And I will not say anything against him. And oh my God, the light bulb. Here comes the light bulb again. My father's offenses are their own punishment for him. I do not need to punish him anymore. I do not need to punish anyone. And when I saw him popping through the bushes, he parked in the wrong parking lot at the hotel, and he was all stooped over, old rusty alcoholic, and I just put my arms around him, told him I loved him. And we went to my brother's home group together. And my father chaired the meeting. And I carried the message of alcohol, of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we went to the service, and I got to eulogize my brother. I made a point of saying, my brother and I were always so grateful that our father gave us the gift of golf. And I was able to talk about what my brother had brought to this world. And so later that day, my father was going to drive back to Dallas. It was 3 p.m. And he got in the car and a few raindrops hit the windshield and he put the window down and he looks up at me and he says, Will, do you think I should stay another night? I said, no, I think you can get 100 miles in. I'd had enough of him. He's high maintenance, let me tell you. Anyway, he toddled off and it would end up being the last time I saw him. But we made amends to each other and we finally got it right. This is how God orchestrates in my life. And step 9, like I was taught, thank God I had a script that my sponsor gave me, that I could do it properly. And in each case, say, what can I do to make it right? And I've learned in making amends, it doesn't have to be a solemn affair necessarily. You know, if I do something or trespass or say something wrong to somebody, I can go to them with a smile on my face and, you know, kind of just with some self-deprecating humor and apologize. And it's, you know, boom, it's gone. What a beautiful program. And so step 10, like I say, I'm doing that daily in the spot. You know, what I found is when I practice the 11th step every day, it comes, the spot inventories come because I have a conscious contact with God. You know, I do my best to practice. I have time in the morning to devote to the 11th step. And so that's a vital step that I know what step I'm supposed to be on later in the day to have that conscious contact. And I'm fortunate that I have time. I swim laps in the morning. I'm usually at the Y at 5 in the morning. I can't do it every day anymore, but it is wonderful. There's positive people there that are trying to be healthy. And I'm still a partner in the business. And so the 11th step helps with that too, and in every facet of my life. And then the 12th step is just, it's been such a wondrous thing that Steve gave me the blueprint for helping other alcoholics. And it's just been a wonderful experience that when I help another alcoholic, it puts my life in a beautiful perspective. It enhances my gratitude and it lifts me up. Hopefully I'm lifting them up as well. You know, in the times when I don't have a sponsee, I can just say, hey, I'm going to make sure I go to the food line and practice the principles there. Practice the principles. It's a full-time thing. You know, I need to be doing that, practicing it all the time. You know, when I leave the house at 5 in the morning, I'm looking for the first person I can show grace and forgiveness towards. And usually it's on the highway. Sometimes it's not till I get to the pool. But there's always going to be somebody that's going to annoy me. And so I go, oh, there they are. And then I can say, thank you, God, and show them grace and forgiveness. I love it when people tailgate me. Oh, there he is. I can show him grace and forgiveness. And I start singing as I get out on Godwin Boulevard. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a wonderful feeling. Everything's going my way. Because when I go God's way, everything does go my way. Even when I perceive it going south, it's going my way. God gives me opportunities for growth. Thank God. You know, dark times have come in AA, and it always draws me closer to the God of my understanding. All my family members have passed away. Dear beloved pets, that's even harder than the family members are, but for me. But there's been so many wondrous experiences. That first one with my mother. I was diagnosed with cancer in my fourth year around that time. I was sponsoring guys. I was the GSR and I was chairing the public information committee. And it was clear when I got the diagnosis, I walked outside after seeing the oncologist and I looked up and I said, God, I'm going to let you take care of that result. I'm going to keep doing what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to Florida for 2.5 months for treatment. And I found a home group, and I stuck my hand out to a newcomer, and it turns out that's why I was there. The cancer was merely the vehicle to get me there to help this man. What a wonderful experience. I think I only missed going to a meeting 2 or 3 days because of the side effects of the treatment. And it was like a big vacation, and I had a pool at the house, and that's when I started swimming laps, and I would get up and I'd walk 2 miles at 4 in the morning. And after treatment, I'd dance into treatment. And there were two young girls in their 20s telling me to drop my pants and get on the table. It was like being in heaven. Steve says I'm a dirty old man, but... And I'd dance out of there, and then I'd go take another walk later in the day after a nap. Another wondrous experience. Last September, I swam a mile that morning. I cleaned my house because I had some female companionship coming to visit me. At 9 o'clock at night, I had Law and Order on. I marched over to get my water and my hand wouldn't work right. And so I said, well, I'm going to get up. And I started walking. And I was walking like I was drunk. I said, I've walked like this before. So I got back to the chair pretty quick. And I consulted Dr. Google.
Yeah.
And Dr. Google said, take some action. Take it pretty quick. And I did. And I called 911. Now, what alcoholic wants to call 911 at 9 o'clock at night? Not me. I wanted to go to bed and act like nothing was wrong. And the ambulance, the lady on the phone said, don't leave, don't move, but secure your pets. I was going, how do I do that? I have a cat. Anyway, I'm 200 yards back in the woods, and the fire trucks come, and the ambulance just peeps. And they can't find the house, so I crawl over to the and start flipping the porch light. And I'll tell you, everybody can go to the hospital, call the ambulance. they didn't want to see my insurance card or anything. They just expressway right into the emergency room and put me in a room. And, you know, it was obvious I'd had a stroke. So they put me in this room, and it got to be about 1 a.m. The door, they had closed the door. I'm all wired up. I love OVC Hospital. I've done so much AA there. I've worked the steps in the Rose Garden with sponsees. I've done the third step in the chapel with sponsees and gone to meetings with Roger there. I knew this day was coming. So I was happy to be there. I was happy to be practicing the principles. And the fire alarm goes off. And the strobe lights right above me strobing. And nobody comes. And I hear people scurrying around. I hear the word fire and I hear the word smoke. 45 minutes I laid there. And the fire alarm kept going off. And I just started going, God is with me. God is with me. God is with me. And he was. And I was okay. And finally the nurse came in and I was nice as I could be. I said, oh, thank you. Can I get some more ice water? Oh, God, if you don't have my chart, get my chart. I knew when my tests were going to be before they told me. I had every test I could have within 12 hours, including an MRI. They finally put me in a private room at 3 that afternoon, and they said, you're going to need to see the neurologist before we can let you go, and that may be tomorrow or the next day. 7 o'clock, this lady walks in. I'm your neurologist. I said, oh, great. And she said, you've had a minor stroke, but I think this can just be a bump in the road with the right medications. I said, do you think I can get out of here tonight? She said, well, I think so. Do you have anybody at home to take care of you? I said, my kitty cat. She kind of rolled her eyes, and she started talking about the medications that I would be taking. And I said, well, you should know I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she looks at me and she says, me too. And all of a sudden, we're on the same plane. We're talking about what meetings we go to, and we're talking the language of the heart. What a wonderful experience. And that Australian nurse came in. And she said, I've got a date tonight. We got to get you out of here quick. I said, well, I'm ready. She loaded me up in the wheelchair. We're flying down the hallway. And she said, oh, shit, I forgot to put your mask on. And I pulled my shirt up and I said, Crikey, just go faster. And my friend met me and took me home. I was back home within 23 hours. Another wondrous experience is they just keep coming. You know, it is my hope and my prayer that I cause no one any more harm in my life. And it is my hope and my prayer that I carry myself with grace and dignity for the rest of my days, the way my mother taught me at the end of her life. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Will.